Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
You are now listening to The Awakened Soul.
All right, listen, I'm still hype. I'm still on a high from the live show that me and Oversaturated did, and I hope you guys hear that and feel it from my voice. But welcome to The Awakened Soul. This episode is going to be the Black Panther review. Like I said, pulled from that live show that me and Oversaturated did on Twitter, Periscope. So unfortunately, if this is your first time hearing it, you did miss that video stream. It was great. It was dope. We had a huge interaction, huge turnout. I want to thank everyone who turned out for that, who retweeted it, who just made it grow bigger than what we thought it did. We went into that live show with a goal of 60 viewers, yet we've crossed 200 so far. We crossed 135 live, and the rest of those have come after the fact, and it's still rising. So I just want to thank everyone who was a part of that, everyone that helped us promote that, everything to get that hype train going. This show, so it's mainly going to be that Black Panther live review. We're going to have a brief Out of the Mind of Haze, which I'm just going to go over a few of the announcements you will hear in the live show, but I'm going to go into a little bit more detail about them. So I'm excited for the show. Also, what was not in the live show, the last segment of this show is going to be us talking about just some of the progression of black superheroes and how they've been depicted over the years. We talk about Meteor Man. We talk about some Ralph and Johnny talk about Blank Man a little bit. I kind of refuse to talk about that movie, but they did. So that's just a little extra content. I always like to provide something extra on top of the live show, just in case you did see the live show already. Still gives you a reason to listen to the podcast. So you're going to have that review section. Then the last segment is going to be just us discussing some black superheroes in general and where we can see things going and stuff like that. So we're going to go ahead and get into our intro music. And then on the other side of our wonderful intro music, we are going to get right into Out of the Mind of Haze and then that Black Panther.
The awakened soul.
All right, so we're out of the mind of Haze, and like I said, you're gonna hear these announcements from the recording from the live show, but I'm gonna add a little more color to it. The Awakened Soul has joined Urban Mogul Life. Check them out. Check us out there at urbanmogullife.com. It's a network of podcasts of people who all about, you know, doing our thing, making this podcast thing everything that it can be, doing it at the heights. You guys are going to hear a lot of them, hopefully, on this show. You're going to hear a lot of cross-pollination. Some of the other podcasts over there, the Mogul Lounge, Sweats and Suits, Dualistic, you know, Moguls on Sports. There's a lot of podcasts over there. And the thing with that is that Geek Set as well. I'm short and citing everyone. Everyone's listening to this. Charges to my mind, not my heart. I'm still on a high. I'm from everything that's happened the last few days between me joining Urban Mogul Life, the live show coming off without a hitch like we wanted it to. all the growth there. I recently added the podcast to SoundCloud. I think we've been on there for like 3 days now, and the download numbers have just been crazy in that short amount of time. Like it's been a lot, honestly, going on with the Awakened Soul that I had to kind of just sit back and just realize, like, it's moving. Like this is becoming a movement, and it's couldn't be just because of me. It's easy for me to be the one who sits in front of the mic, me to be the one who sits here and puts these ideas and try to get these shows together and takes all of the credit for that. But it's not. I know it's not. It's every single one of you guys that have retweeted the show, that have told your friends about the show. It's because of people who've come on the show, like Johnny, Ralph, Fane Black, Andrew Bello, who's always been a big part of this show, Billy Ray Valentine, who's helped shouted me out on his show when I first started, and who's just giving me advice in this podcasting world as I'm going. It's Urban Mogul Life as well, and Poindexter and Maul over there, who I've talked to, and just who, you know, they love the show, and Poindexter specifically, like, even before I was officially part of the team, was listening to my podcast and telling me stuff about, like, the editing and how his ear appreciates it, and I'm humbled by all of that. When I started this podcast, like I've told this story before, I sent it to my friends, not even necessarily intending to put it on iTunes originally, because I just didn't know how it was going to come across. All of my friends have supported me. All my family, like this, that's my podcast family. Bello is a brother of mine. JB, who I recently touched base with, I'm glad that he is among the living, but like, that's my brother. Adam, who's been on, like, I'd go crazy naming as many people who've been on and contributed to this show, like a dualistic, the Extra Regular Podcast, Justice and Kylo over there, like, everyone who's helped me along this journey, I just want to say thank you. And we're going to continue to put out the dope content. That's never going to stop. The Awakened Soul is not going anywhere. I know I joked on Twitter a few days ago about retiring from podcasting. That was just me having fun. I'm not going anywhere. The Awakened Soul isn't going anywhere. And then also, we announced in this live show, Breaks Radio, which is a joint project between me, Johnny, and Ralph from Oversaturated. And I think you hear it in the live show. All three of us have an amazing chemistry, and it's not going to be necessarily a weekly thing. We haven't really hammered that out yet. It may be, but we are going to be doing this at a higher level than what we've been able to do before. It's going to be amazing. Like we're keeping it going. And this podcast, I was doing wrestling podcasts for a long time before I started this podcast, and that's my family. Like, the WWPN is my family. I love them. And I would not have been able to have the confidence to do the show if it wasn't for them trusting in my leadership to lead a whole podcast network and to grow to the heights of what we did and what we are continuing to grow with. So I come to you humbly, in this out of the mind of Hayes. I'm sorry, I just changed the name of the segment, but what we're doing going forward in 2018. It's we're only 2 months, 2.5 months into, well, no, just 2 months, but into 2K18, and it's going to be a hell of a ride. I can't wait to see what the rest of this year brings. I'm a mogul, people. It's official. I was already the CEO. Now I'm a mogul as well. So I just really look forward to this next venture and what's going to happen. And it opens up a whole new world of guests and collaboration, for me and this podcast. So shouts out to that. Hats off to everyone. I can't wait to interact with my new family over there, the familia, as we've called each other, the squad, whatever you want to do there. But that's enough of me waxing poetic about my podcasting journey. I just want to thank everybody again. We're gonna go ahead and get into another brief musical break, and on the other side of that, we're going to start the live review. We're going to start the review of Black Panther, one of the best comic book movies that I've seen in a while, and it's been just turned into a whole movie. So I'll see you guys on the other side.
I fight the world, I fight you, I fight myself, I fight God, just tell me how many burdens left. I fight pain and hurricanes, today I wept. I'm trying to fight back tears, flood on my doorsteps. Life, we live in hell, puddles of blood in the street. Shooters on top of the building, government aid ain't relief. Earthquake, the body drop, the ground breaks. The poor run with smoke lungs and scar face. Who need a hero?
Hero.
You need a hero. Look in the mirror. There go your hero. Who on the front lines at ground
zero? All right, ladies and gentlemen. It's time. This we've been hyping this for so long, man. It's the Black Panther Live show. Oversaturated is in the building. CEO Hayes is in the building. Fellas.
Yo.
It's lit.
Hey, man. Hey,
y'all see what's up right now? Look.
I'm trying to contain my excitement, man.
Lit ain't even the word, man. Like, this is amazing. Look, I'm glad we were able to get to this point to be able to even do this. But I don't know, man. It's not much left to say. We're here to review Black Panther. We're going to go ahead and say this is full spoilers. We're going to be talking about the full movie. So prepare your hearts, your minds, your souls, everything, because we're going to be talking about it at a high, high level. Fellas, man, let's start off. We have to start off with this. And that is that Wesley Snipes started to try to get a Black Panther movie together in the 90s. It did not come together. And I kind of understand it to a certain extent now, because I don't think it wouldn't have been done this way. And the way that the movie was done this time, it was so big for the culture. It was such an event. And, you know, the whole comic book movie world was ready for something like this. I got to ask you, boys, just what do you think about the movie? And just high level before we break it down, getting into it. And do you also believe and agree that that now was the time for a movie like this to drop?
Ralph, go ahead.
Okay. I would say definitely yes, man. Like, I definitely think it lived up to the hype. Personally, do I think Wesley could have played a better Black Panther? Yeah. But that doesn't negate what just transpired. It was like the first time I heard Cranes in the Sky. It's a beautiful thing, man. My eyes just, lit up. I was, damn near had tears in my eyes, man. It was beautiful.
What about you, Johnny?
This movie was great. do I think Wesley could have played a better Black Panther in his prime? Maybe. I'm not 100% sure, but maybe. But I love the movie. It could not have come at a better time, especially with the climate of the nation and all that good stuff. But the movie was great, man. The movie was great.
Yeah, great to say the least, but we're going to break it down even more than just saying it was great. We're going to get into the characters first, and we're going to save Chadwick and Killmonger for the last two, because that's obviously who the movie was built around. I want to start, obviously, with Ulysses S. Klaue, who was in Age of Ultron. It kind of fed into this. They didn't really play it too much, so you were cool if you had never seen that movie kind of coming into this. But the fact that, where his character went, he died in the movie, y'all. Like I said, this is full spoilers, so I told you guys to prepare your hearts, souls, and minds.
Yeah,
but so what did you think about his character, the fact that we got way more of him than what we got in Age of Ultron? And then, I feel like he kind of went out with the chump, and I was bothered considering that I read the comics. Well, I used to read the comics, not as big in the comics anymore. Like, Klaue is Black Panther's Joker, and we got one interaction between the two of them. That bothers me a little bit. What do you guys think about it?
Well, he definitely needed to be in the movie. Absolutely. So I'm glad he was in the movie as much as he was. And you just mentioned that they only had one interaction with each other. Yeah, that was crazy. They definitely needed to somehow come into more contact with each other. I'm not sure how they would have done it, but they definitely needed to do that. I'm not gonna lie, I'm happy he died. I didn't want any white people in the movie, but I'm just saying, even though he is Black Panther's Joker, but it was good to see him die. So,
Come on, man. Hey,
Listen. I've been watching black people die in movies for damn near 30 years. I needed this.
My favorite genre of movies is horror movies by far. And we all know the black people get it first for years, decades. It's more so, whether he was white or not, it's more so for me, like I said, the story possibilities that could have been used with Klaue versus Black Panther that a large part of the audience is gonna not ever be able to do now or to take part in because he's dead. But Ralph, what are your thoughts on it? They don't care.
I think we were definitely robbed when Klaue died, because Andy Serkis and the way that he portrayed Klaue is genius. Like, he's like that crazy. Like you said, Joker, like I never heard that before because, you know, I don't, you know, really know the comic side of it. But like that charisma, like that craziness that he had, like just when he was chained up in the interrogation room, just singing songs and stuff like that. I love villains like that. So the fact that he was killed, I was like, damn, like that's it. Like, that's all I got. But I mean, to definitely see, you know, what they did with Age of Ultron, just kind of piggybacking off of that. You didn't have to necessarily see that movie to understand what was going on, because they gave you enough backstory to where you understood that, at least what he did in those movies to get to that point. So I definitely think Claw was a dope villain or a sub-villain, however you want to phrase it, in this movie.
All right. I feel that. We have to get into, because before we get into the women of his life, I want to talk about Everett Ross, and this is not purposeful to get the white people out the way, but there were only two white people in this movie for real. But Everett Ross, who was in Civil War as well, but we didn't really, I mean, besides a couple lines in Civil War, we didn't really get to know the character at all. Like, to see him interact with T'Challa, to see, you know, when they're speaking their language around him and they have him figured out and they let him go and interrogate Claw, and they're hearing the whole thing. But he, and really when you think about it, he played a large part in the finale of this movie as far as like stopping the Killmonger's plans. What do you think about, and Johnny, I guess I'll come back to you first on this one. I know you didn't want any white people in the movie, so how do you feel about a white person playing such an integral part towards the end of the movie?
I'm not going up front. I wasn't happy about it, but I guess it was okay that he did assist in like stopping the transportation of the weapons to the war dogs, you know, across the world. That was cool, but you know, the main fight was still back in, you know, back on the land of Wakanda between Black Panther and Killmonger. So I guess it was okay that he helped stop a grander scheme of plan. So I guess it was cool.
I guess it was cool. Come on, Johnny. What about you, Ralph?
I like Everett Ross in this movie because it wasn't like he was integral, but I don't think he was a focal point. And I like how they introduced like little subtle stuff about him. Oh, he was a former Air Force pilot. And then, you know, all of a sudden he's the one flying the plane because he was the only one left that could fly the plane. Mm-hmm. So just that dynamic of it. And, you know, I don't want to mention, you know, the character because we'll get to that part. But what she did to, you know, give him that comfort, you know, because she said, I made it American. So, you know, it was easy. And then she kind of walked him through it, too. So just that. And he kind of had a gratitude towards it because they did heal him. So, you know, they kept him from being paralyzed.
Yeah.
And one more thing, he did almost like sacrifice his life to like stop the last ship from getting out of Wakanda. Like, that was noble, but. That's all you get, man.
Bro, man, you savage, man. You don't want to give no. I mean, but I feel you on that, man. It is what it is. There, I ain't gonna judge you too much on that. But let's move on. Like I said, let's go into the women in T'Challa's life. Where you guys want to start off with? We're gonna save Shuri for last because she played a much bigger part. But Okoye, what do you guys think about her?
I love Okoye. I love the Dorajami. Is that how you pronounce the whole like
Dora Milaje?
Yeah,
that's what it is. I love those ladies. But just sticking on Okoye, fierce, strong, has a comedic element to her, but you can definitely see that she's fierce. You don't play with her, and then at the same time, you can see that she does have a loving element. Two, so it's like you get all that within her. And if you guys are familiar with The Walking Dead, you see that she has that same energy on Walking Dead. Her name is Danae. I can't pronounce the last name, but she's the same, not the same character, but she has those same traits.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Now, this refresh my memory. This is the general of the Dora Milaje, correct?
Yes.
Now, I found it interesting that she was willing to kill her husband for her country. Like, she was going to take that man's life at the end, toward the end.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that was the thing. I didn't understand. I knew that they, you know, had a, you know, situation. I didn't know they were married.
I mean, I figured.
We're putting it together. They didn't say it outright in the movie if they were married.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah.
I mean, besides the line when T'Challa and her, my love, they didn't really play much into that. Matter of fact, they didn't even interact much. Like, besides a couple of looks, that is one of my problems with the movies, because that in that ending yes. with those two, the fact that she was willing to kill him would have been better served had we spent even a half a scene with those two, maybe at the end of the night, with them just sitting around talking about T'Challa taking over, talking about what they think of his rule or something, would have done more for the characters. They kind of just threw in that one line and then they wanted us to have an emotional reaction to him. That's one of my problems. I don't have many with the movie, but that is one of my problems with the movie.
But what about the scene where Killmonger first became the king and he sat on the throne and, you know, was basically telling them the plan about, you know, getting the weapons out to the war dogs. And then they had the married couple had that exchange. Like, the guy was like, you know,
true, but that
probably
that wasn't enough for
that,
me.
That wasn't like, that didn't say anything about them being in love to me. That was just more of two generals having a difference of opinion. Like, I wanted to see something more as far as like the love aspect, the fact that they were in a relationship. That's what I mean. I mean, yeah, there were certain interactions with them, but nothing that drilled them home is like, there's this couple, she's willing to kill her man for her country. That should mean more than what it ended up meaning in the movie to me. But I feel you. Yeah. I feel you on that.
That's what's up though. But yeah, she was great and she was kicking ass too.
Yeah.
Dope.
Yeah.
You gotta get in Walking Dead. You gotta get in Walking Dead, bro.
Johnny, you don't watch Walking Dead, man?
Listen, I watched the first season, which was like 6 episodes, and I got through half of the second season, and I was never able to go back. Like,
that was before Michonne popped up, who's the character that we're talking about now. Her name is Danae in real life. She's the one that plays Okoye. And essentially, Michonne does the same shit in Walking Dead that she's doing in, you know, to an extent.
Yeah.
In Black Panther.
Now, I will say, and this may be a troll, but they definitely could have put a better wig on her when they went to South Korea.
Well, that was purposeful, I think, because it was to nail home the fact that she was uncomfortable with the wig on her head. I think that's why they purposely had one that didn't look great on her. At least that's the way I took it. Maybe that's just me being hopeful.
She could have been uncomfortable in a better looking wig. Is all I'm saying.
You haven't seen Walking Dead because she has a dread wig in there.
And that's a horrible wig. So matter of fact, it was a step up. It's definitely a step up. But Let's go to Nakia. Am I saying that right? Lupita's character.
Nakia.
The love of T'Challa's life. Like, the opening scene with T'Challa is all built around him saving her and wanting her to be at his crowning ceremony to become king. And, you know, I think that they did a better job with the love aspect with them, definitely. But it was the main character, so they kind of had to. Right. But her as a character, for someone who... She made sure to point out that she was not a Dora Milaje. She was not one of that army. But that end scene, she was giving Killmonger the business. Like, nobody else was able to hang with him at that point. And matter of fact, and this is what I love about the way that the women were depicted in this movie. Both Danai's character and Lupita's character is that they are better fighters, just pure fighters, than T'Challa. Like, they even said that. They even said that Okoye was the best fighter to come out of Wakanda, and I love the fact that they did that. And, you know, it's easy to make the man probably the best fighter, especially when he's king, but to have women that are right up there with him, possibly better than him, you got to give the hats off to him. But what did you think about Nakia's character?
John, you want to go first?
Lupita is definitely bae after this movie. Like, if she wasn't before, she definitely is now. The fact that she was a spy, but she could fight, she spoke... I would assume many different languages, even though we saw her speak English, Wakandan, I guess, and then Korean. She was amazing. Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. I know this bae, Ralph. Ralph, I know this your bae. So go ahead. Let's sit back.
Nakia is definitely bae. Like, I definitely wanted some dark chocolate sitting in that movie. Let me tell you, man. Because it was two scenes in particular. And I hate to objectify, but just look, Peter looked amazing. But the one scene, the casino scene, where she's coming down the steps with T'Challa, I was like, bruh, she looks bad. Like, in that dress and that hair, her hair, that was her hair too. I was like, woo. And the one scene where she was dancing on the boat where they was getting ready to do the crowning ceremony. It was real subtle. I don't know if people paid attention, but she was dancing on the boat. I was like, oh.
Getting it.
Yes, but Nakia in this movie was great. The only thing that I kind of knocked, and it's not the character, it's just a plot point. Like, I understand that they were ex, but I just wanted a little bit more of their relationship, maybe why they broke up or why it didn't kind of work. I kind of understood, and I don't think they ever really got to it. Maybe you guys can tell me, but it just felt like they could explore why it didn't work a little bit more to see why they got to that point. That was my take from that. But Nakia as a character, she was badass though too.
Well, see, in my opinion, I think that they kind of explain why they got. It's just that she did not want to be a queen. Like, she wanted to be out in the world doing something else. I think that was really it. I at least my take from the movie. I didn't get that they broke up because of anything one another did or something that's keeping them apart from, like, a difference of opinion. She just wanted to be out in the world feeling like she's making a difference. So, I more fleshing out, and that's going to be one of the things we definitely talk about with this movie, because this movie was, what, 2 hours and, like, 15 minutes? It definitely, I don't say this many with this movie. That 2 hours and 15 minutes flew by. If they would have added another 30 minutes onto this movie, I probably wouldn't even felt it, man.
No, not
definitely. At all. I thought I read somewhere, the first cut was, like, 4 hours. I need all the extended scenes.
Because there was certain plot points that I felt like could have been expanded on, but we can get to that when we get to it. But I was just like, wow. Like, I mean, I enjoyed the movie for what it was, but it's just certain points that I was like, we could have, explored this a little bit more, or we could have cut this down some. But I ain't Ryan Coogler. salute to you, bro. Like, salute to Ryan Coogler.
Right.
Man, we got to talk about him, because that dude has not made a bad movie yet. But the next lady that we got to talk about, Shuri. T'Challa's 16-year-old sister running the science division. In the comics, she does become Black Panther eventually. And Ralph, I don't know if you knew that or not, but we may touch on that, we may not. But as far as this movie, I love the fact that they felt like a brother and sister. They felt like big brother, little sister, without it being forced. Like, some movies you see, when they want to make you feel that brother-sister dynamic, they'll force little lines in there, or just awkwardly, or they'll hate each other. Like, that's the biggest way in movies to make a brother and sister combo, is to make them not really like each other. But here, they had that sibling rivalry. But she also loved her brother. He loved her. Yes. They had their handshake, like the little jokes about his shoes. Everything was on point. It was brother and sister. That's I have six sisters. That's what happens in brother sisters relationships. Ralph, what did you think about it?
Shuri was dope. Like she stole pretty virtually every scene and felt like she was in. And she commanded it because she was so intelligent about, the use of vibranium and the weapons. And she's pretty much like Alfred or, his Batman or something like that. I'm trying to say it, but I can't say it right. But I was just like, she's dope. And the fact, like, back to that brother-sister thing, I like when she recorded him showing him how the suit worked. And he said, delete that after the suit fucked him up. But, I mean, Shuri, dope. Like, dope. I love her.
She has to be... The way she was depicted in this movie, she has to be the smartest person in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes.
The smartest. Like, smarter than Tony Stark. The Bruce smartest. Yeah, all of the cats. Like, I love it. I love it. Like, it's freaking amazing. And I got a hot take about her. I don't know if I want to say this now or should I wait till later.
No. Go ahead. Come on.
All right. So, I don't know if you guys or the viewers have seen the Infinity War Super Bowl commercial, right? Uh-huh. In that commercial, Tony Stark's Iron Man suit materializes on his body the same way T'Challa's suit did.
Yes.
I'm going to say, I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm going to say that Shuri either made or helped Tony Stark make his suit for Iron Man. Make his Iron Man suit for Infinity War.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, she's going to probably make Bucky's new arm. She's going to make Iron Man a new suit.
Oh, facts.
Like,
she's going to make Cap's new shield.
She's going to make Cap's new shield. So, like, and the thing is they are positioning her, seriously. And Johnny, you said in some conversations that we've had before as well, positioning her, especially now that she's an American based in that science division, who's to say she doesn't become the Avengers' new science? Like, all the tech. Think about it. There's been a lot of speculation that Tony Stark, whether he dies or just goes away, they're not going to be building the Avengers movies around him anymore. And this is part of what I have to say once we get to T'Challa. I think T'Challa is really set up to kind of be that new moral compass if Cap leaves as well for the Avengers. But if that happens, who's to say that she doesn't become that, like I said, that tech person for the Avengers, all their tech coming out. That's what I hope to see as well, because Shuri has to be the smartest person. Like, she uses... Go ahead.
No, I was just saying Shuri has a lot of like breakout potential in this movie, and I just see her having a lot of crossover. And for the reasons that you guys stated, just the fact that she's so smart, she's the only one that knows how to use the vibranium weapons. So it's just a lot. And I'm waiting on that first scene with her and Tony Stark. That's all I need. Like that's gold. That's gonna be gold.
Whatever you know what else that is. Oh yeah, you know what else is crazy? She actually, because I don't think Tony Stark is going to be like after Avengers 4, I guess. I don't think Tony Stark would be a factor in any of these movies anymore. She actually may become the new Iron Man just in, you know, her own type suit.
I don't see that happening. Now, I'm not saying that I would be against it, but I just don't see it happening. I don't see the passing only because there have already said Ty Simpkins, who played the little kid in the Iron Man 3, is in Avengers 4. He is in Avengers 4. If anybody gets handed that pass that baton, I think it will be him, because him and Tony have that bond, and I think the kid is like 16 now in real life, so it could be something there. I wouldn't want to see her take over the Iron Man mantle, because of in the comics she does become Black Panther. I would like to see her at some point maybe even get a female or her own Black Panther suit, become White Cheetah, something. I would like to see her just be her own thing that represents her and her country, not just become Iron Man, Iron Woman. Like that's Tony's thing. I want to see her do something that is of Wakanda.
Kill my dream, bro. That's what's up. No, I'm bullshitting.
I ain't trying to kill no dreams, man. I'm definitely not trying to kill any dreams.
I know. It's all good. Valid points, though. Valid points.
So we got a question in our chat, and that is, who would want to fight Black Panther or the Fonz? Man, Black Panther would kick the Fonz ass, man. Don't need
the Fonz.
Yeah, come on now, man.
Happy days?
Yes. We're moving on. We're moving on. I love you, but we're moving on. So after talking about Shuri, we have to talk, before we talk any other character, because kind of its own character in this movie is the vibranium. Vibranium is all throughout this and in Wakanda and everything. Like it's the basis point of the movie. I have a theory. And they said it before, is that the vibranium, they haven't even, I think it was Claude that said it, they've only breached the surface, and it came from a meteor. I want to say that meteor that landed, that's causing the heart-shaped herb and the vibranium, is the soul stone. They don't even know that they have an infinity stone underneath Wakanda. That's why Thanos is coming to Wakanda in Infinity War. And I think if you pay attention, that heart-shaped herb glows purple. Is there a purple, like I haven't really looked
at that. The orb is purple. The power stone that was in Guardians of the Galaxy is purple.
That's purple. So like, yeah, who's to say that heart-shaped herb isn't because of the stone that's under Wakanda? It's not soaking up that energy, and that's what's causing the heart-shaped herb. Go ahead, Jai.
That's a great ass point, because I was going to ask at the end, like, something has to be in Wakanda, because why else would they have this big ass battle scene in Wakanda during Infinity War? Thanos is going there for a reason. That's a good point. The Soul Stone probably is there. I didn't even think about that.
I thought it would have popped up in this movie, but I guess we'll probably see that at the beginning of Infinity War then. Right.
And it's perfect, because like all the other movies, and it's a way of making an Infinity Stone important, but retroactively. Like they changed the formula. Almost all of the Phase 1 and Phase 2 Marvel movies have been almost built around the pursuit or something of an Infinity Stone. They kind of did it in this one, if my theory is correct, without naming an Infinity Stone, without making it the crux of the whole movie, because that's kind of where their power's coming from. So like after we see Infinity War, now we can go back and get even more out of Black Panther. And what does that mean to like Black Panther's powers then would come from an Infinity Stone in some type of way? So it just brings it all together.
That's dope. I swear I didn't even think about that. But I was wondering, why would they be in Wakanda during Infinity War? But that makes perfect sense. Now, the only thing about that is, like, how would Thanos discover the stone? Like where would he know the stone is? How would he actually get to the stone? And then what color would the stone be? Because it can't be purple, because we already have a purple stone.
True. And you make a good point there. I mean, there are some holes in the theory for sure. It's not anything I know for sure, but I mean, if it's true, as far as like Thanos knowing the stone, I would think that, and it seems Thanos is like, he just knows where the stones are. Like in every movie, he's kind of known where they are. I don't know if that's going to be something that's explained or whatnot, or maybe since he has the gauntlet, it kind of leads him to where the stones are. Who knows? I don't know there, but I mean, I'm sure they'll figure out a story if that's going to be it. I mean, we still have Infinity War, then Captain Marvel. There could be an Infinity Stone there. Who knows? And I know, Johnny, you had a theory before that from Thor had the Soul Stone. Who was it?
Oh, Heimdall. Yeah. In that sword that he uses to like look at souls of the people across the nine realms and shit. Yeah. So
we'll see. We'll see. I mean, that's just a little speculation. But let's jump back into this movie. I want to talk about Wakabi. I have like, come on, man. Like I'm all for adding layers to characters. The thing is that they're early in the movie. Let me flesh it out. He basically turns on T'Challa to side with Killmonger because Killmonger is the one who brought Claw, and he had Claw killed his parents. But they had a scene early in the movie with him and T'Challa where Wakabi specifically says, "I don't think we should be going out to other countries." The moment Killmonger comes around, "Oh, I think we should be going out and dominating other countries." If they would have changed that line to just him saying, "Well, T'Challa, there's a lot we could gain from going out and helping other countries," then that turn would make more sense, because then not only did Killmonger bring Claw, but he's also doing something that Wakabi already kind of thought himself. You had him be a complete bitch, in my opinion, to have him completely turn on his own ideals for someone who's to them is an outsider. What do you think about that, Ralph? I see you thinking that.
Yeah, Wakabi was just conflicting. Like, I understand the death of his parents, and he wanted Claw dead, and then this guy comes with the body of Claw. So maybe his loyalty just changed. Like, he was like, 30 years of your father not doing anything, and then I figured you would do something different. Now, you know, but that was really just the pursuit of Claw, not necessarily the ideals of how they should interact with the world. But I think the fact that Killmonger came and then he found out that certain things weren't true, maybe Killmonger told him the story about his father. Maybe, you know, sorry, we kind of getting that into that. But I think that's what made him change his mind about T'Challa and how things were going. So maybe he was just like, I'm going to just roll with this guy. And that's how I think that he thought from that. Like, it wasn't implied either, but I just think that's where it went.
I could feel that. What about you, Johnny?
I mean, I just think he was still... Killmonger bringing Claw to Wakanda dead, I still don't think Wakabi felt closure from that, and he was easily manipulated by Killmonger, because Killmonger was this guy that trained in the armed forces and, you know, went to so many different countries, killed people, toppled governments and shit. So maybe it was easy for him to manipulate Wakabi.
I don't know. They mentioned that as well. Everett mentioned that, how Killmonger is basically doing his training. They came in to destroy countries when he was in the military. So yeah, he kind of already has the upper hand as far as like knowing how to systematically break down governments. But, you know, I mean, so that we'll leave Wakabi there, because I'm sure he'll come up when we talk about Killmonger. But we got to talk about someone who ended up being one of my favorite characters in this movie. M'Baku. There you go.
Yes.
M'Baku.
Yeah.
Listen,
I know who you're talking about.
Listen here. He wasn't in the movie much at all. But when he showed up at the beginning of the movie and fought T'Challa, you know, they could have not had him show back up at all. But when he came back up, he found T'Challa, proved to be honorable because T'Challa spared his life. He saved T'Challa's life. Also said he would keep his mother safe. But the comedy, when T'Challa is talking to his mom and his sister and they're going through the plan, and he just randomly is like, "Are you finished? Are you done? Are you finished?
Are you done?
Listen, and it was a perfect way to cut the tension and add some comedy without it feeling forced. But and then he showed up at the end of the movie, kind of saved the day against Wakabi's army there. But I really like this character, and I want to see more. Like, he got his spot. If you notice at the end of the movie, he's now in the inner circle. He's back in that circle of Wakanda's leadership. And he said before that there hadn't been a king of Wakanda who really showed up at their borders for centuries. So that means a lot. And the Water Tribe, which was Wakabi's tribe, was no longer represented. So however that dynamic changed, now we can have, and I always like to think about things going forward and how that changes, how they could possibly change and adapt. But now you have the possibility of not even the second movie, maybe the third movie, because Wakabi didn't die. Maybe his tribe is coming for T'Challa now because of what happened. But let's get back to Makabu's character. Like, the guy was great to me. Ralph, what did you think?
First of all, man, the barbers in Wakanda are lit, man. You see that man cut, man? Like, his beard in it. I was like, I see you, M'Baku.
They
like,
shaping him up with
stars. All right, baby. Yeah.
This man, but he talked about, but I actually kind of agree with what he was saying. He's like, this technology is making y'all soft. Like, Like I get what he was saying. Like, at the beginning of the movie, I was like, you know, they dropped a few nuggets here and there, you know, throughout the movie. But M'Baku's character was, you know, like a great addition. And I think he's in Infinity War too. I think I read that somewhere. I can see that. Obviously, you know, they're fighting in Wakanda. But M'Baku was, you know, dope, man. This big black dude, just big, muscular, just, you know, running shit, wrecking stuff, man. And they barked.
So I understand, you know, they are, I guess, like the ape tribe and all that. And I understand they're trying to make the ape noises, but man, they sounded like they were barking dogs. Like,
well, I just look at some of the primitive, like the more primitive tribe of the Wakandans, because, you know, beginning of the movie, they described, you know, this one tribe went to the mountains. So I was like, oh, okay. And then when they show up, they're the most primitive of them all. Yeah. So I was like, oh.
They still had electricity, though.
Yeah, they definitely had light.
They definitely had electricity.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. But yeah, so and let's segue. But let's talk about, before we get to the last two characters, I want to talk about a couple of things. I want to talk about how beautiful this fucking movie was. Like, this movie was and the thing is the subtlety. So this movie was set in Africa, and they were a way more technological advanced society. But even their ships looked very African. Like, if you would think of like how Africans would design an advanced aircraft, it looked like that. Like, when it expanded, it looked like African. And like I said, the Wakanda itself, all the panther coming out of his area, and then also Makabu's tribe, and all this movie was beautifully shot. I think Ryan Coogler, hats back off to him. Like, everything about this movie was just gorgeous and beautiful. Johnny, what did you think?
I 100% agree. Now in watching the credits roll, I noticed that the movie was shot in Atlanta and in Korea.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
Now,
Marvel Studios is in Atlanta,
right? Mm-hmm. So, like, where did they get these beautiful ass Serengeti shots and shit from? Like, maybe they just went and like just recorded some shit. I don't know, but I know most of the movie may have been CGI, which, you know, whatever. But I found it interesting that it was only shot in Atlanta and Korea. So, but other than that, I mean, the I guess what they had, the CGI in most places, was beautiful. So I loved it.
Yeah, I got some issues with the CGI that we'll get to, especially in some certain areas. But Ralph, what did you think about how the movie was shot and everything?
Oh, the movie was beautiful as far as, like, you know, it being shot. There was like one or two scenes where I was like, the CGI just not, you know, not really rocking with. But I'll tell you, the most beautiful scene to me was when T'Challa first got off the plane. The ship, and like he's getting ready to do they're doing the ceremony.
Oh yeah,
for the crowning ceremony. So I thought, like, that view, I was like, woo! Like, I enjoyed that. Like, just his view of everybody in Wakanda looking down at him, and it was a celebration, and then, you know, challenge day and all that stuff. So it was cool, man. I enjoyed that, and the fight sequences. Woo!
We'll talk about that next.
Okay.
We'll talk about that next. So I got to ask you, Ralph, you know, you're the lord of the jig in this circle right here. How many times did you dance during this movie? Because I know you felt yourself doing it. I know, man, you did it a couple of times, man.
Africa. Like, especially like when I think definitely like the they're getting ready to go to the celebration or whatnot. Everybody's festive. Everybody's on the boat. Everybody's, you know, jamming, living. I was like, they could have had me on there, like, but I enjoyed it, man. It was beautiful to see that.
Yeah,
thanks. Yeah. Listen, man, it the whole thing was just beautiful, and I think if you noticed, there wasn't a lot of music in the movie, but in the points where there was music, like, it was very thought out, and the music perfectly complemented the scene, like. Yeah. Like the car chase scene, the scene where Lupita was, you know, dancing on the boat. Like, the music complemented the specific scenes so perfectly, and it was now, like, it was great.
Did you guys notice that, like, when they did, like, cutaways to different countries, like the opening scene in Oakland, you heard Oakland, you know, hip-hop. Yes. Like, when you go to UK, you hear British. Like, in Africa, you heard African hip-hop. Yes. I was like, they clowning me
That's
right
what
now.
I'm saying. Like, that's crazy. And, like, when they playing, at the beginning, they were playing Too Short, right?
And that goes to Coogler. Like, I'm attributing that 100% to Coogler, because if you pay attention to his movies, the music in all of his movies is very poignant, and it highlights the scene. Like, sometimes, because there's not much score, and for people who don't realize or know the difference between a movie score and the soundtrack, the score is specific orchestra music that's made for the movie to highlight scenes, whereas the soundtrack is traditional music, rap, whatever. But they use, it wasn't much score in this movie, but the way that they use the music, the rap, like, everything about it highlighted the scenes. It made you feel like you were a part of what was going on in that scene. Go ahead, Ralph.
Like, the Weeknd song, when they walked into the casino, like, perfectly placed, right?
Yes.
I was like, yeah. Like, I was like, you can actually feel like they're playing that song in that casino. Maybe they will be, you know, in Korea. I'm not sure, but I just like how they did that. I was like, that was beautiful.
Yeah. What do you think about the, anything left to say about the music, Johnny?
Oh no, I just think the music that was placed in the movie complemented the scenes perfectly. Like, it was great. And so, like, sometimes there could be too much music in movies. Mm-hmm. And this particular movie didn't overly use music, which I'm really a fan of, because I feel like sometimes it takes away from the scenes. So yeah,
absolutely. And we did not, and that's my fault. I guess I'm the host, so I can just blame myself. We talked about the ladies in T'Challa's life, and we forgot to mention Queen Angela Bassett. Like, and I'm not even talking about the queen from the movie. Angela Bassett is a queen in real life of Hollywood.
Bass.
Let's talk about Angela Bassett and the fact that she has not aged in 25 years. Like, she has not aged at all.
Is she like 60? 60?
She's 60. I think she just turned 60.
Listen, that's a beautiful woman. Let me just say that. I'm gonna leave it at that. I'm gonna just leave it at that, man.
Now, for a lot of the, you know, a lot of the people not to be traditional Africans, I think that with their accents, it didn't seem forced. Because you've heard people force accents before. They don't sound too authentic. But even with, like, you know, like Chadwick or Michael had American. He was American, so he don't count. But like Wakabi or Okoye or Zuri. Zuri had a dope accent. You know, Forrest is straight African-American. I won't say, you know. You know,
thank you, 100%.
Listen, Forrest in this movie, man, he had, I think he was only in two, maybe three scenes. He was in the opening scene with the ceremony of the fight. He was in the scene where T'Challa gets the heart-shaped herb after that fight, and he was in the scene with Michael B. Jordan where he died.
He had to get the big reveal from Zuri as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you're right about that. So he had a pivotal part. He just wasn't in it much time, and that again, I attribute that to the director. This cast had almost all of Black Hollywood in it. But it didn't feel like there were too many characters. Considering this was an origin movie, usually when you have this many characters in a first time getting to know the main character movie, it feels forced. It feels overwhelmed. They used all of these characters extremely well, to the point to where everyone played their part, and it didn't seem like they just shoehorned Zuri in because he was Forrest Whitaker. He legitimately had a part to play in this movie. What do you think about that, Ralph?
Oh yeah, Zuri didn't feel Forrest. Like, he was, you know, he was the, you know, the OG or however. I'm not sure what his actual title was, but I enjoyed his character, what he provided. You know, unfortunately, his death. But you know, I didn't enjoy it, but I just hate that it happened. Zuri was such a, you know, spiritual leader to, I think, T'Challa, or uncle figure or however, but you know, he looked up to him. So I hate to see him go, but he was very pivotal to this movie though. Like, even in the beginning, opening credits of the movie.
Yeah, and that was a play by, I'm sorry, I did not look up who played the younger version of Zuri, but
Denzel Whitaker. He played his son in Great Debaters.
Wait, that was Denzel Whitaker? Oh, he didn't get old. Like, I haven't seen Denzel Whitaker since The Great Debaters.
I know.
Man.
He's like 27, 28 now.
Wow. But,
y'all know what else was crazy? My bad, sidebar. But the guy that played the young T'Chaka, that played the Black Panther at the beginning of the movie, that's actually the real life son of the guy that played the older T'Chaka. Did y'all know that?
Oh, really? That makes sense. Yeah. That's good.
I found that out today, actually.
So, I love when they do that in the movies because he did look like him. So it makes a lot of sense there. But yeah, him being a double agent and playing a role in why Michael. So he played a pivotal role in the creation of the villain. When you think about it, the fact that he was spying on Killmonger's father helped create Killmonger ultimately. And that transitions into what we're talking about next. We got to talk about the villain of this movie, man. One of the best Marvel villains, and I want to say everything that's going on. And listen, I understand he's probably one of the best black villains of all time. But let's stop the blasphemy saying that Killmonger was a better villain than Heath Ledger's Joker. It's just not. It's not true. It's not facts at all. Those are not facts. I understand it. I'm sorry for anyone who takes offense to it, but I'm sorry. That's just not facts. We can be pro-black all day, but we can't take away from one of the best cinematic villains of all time, especially in comic book movies. So I'm just saying.
Yeah. It's like Heath Ledger's Joker didn't have a plan. His plan was chaos. Right. That was his plan. He had no overall plan. At least Killmonger had a plan. Exactly. At least he had an overall goal.
and I want to stop. I mean, I don't mean to stop the progress, but we just crossed 100 viewers. Shout out. I got it. Everyone who's watched this, listen, when we came into this, we did not know how this would be perceived, how many people we would have watching this. We just crossed 100 people who have seen this video. So that hats off to you guys. I want to thank
shout out to all y'all.
Everyone who's retweeting it, and we've had people retweet this that didn't even follow at least me beforehand. So I want to give shouts out and hats off to all you guys for promoting this. Hopefully we're doing a good job of what we came to do here. But let's get back into it now. Killmonger as a villain. I want to say that the fact that you could understand why he wanted to do what he wanted to do, it was just the means that he was going through. Like, first of all, the guy's father was murdered. His legacy was taken away by his uncle, who was king. His uncle's son then takes over. Like, the thing is, and they mentioned in the movie, Everett Ross does a good job of mentioning this in the movie, him coming to Wakanda when he did was strategic. He was waiting for a change in who was king, because that's when the government was most... This guy, he was... smart. He trained his whole life to this moment, and I've heard seen a lot of things on Twitter of people saying, well, Killmonger beat T'Challa's ass, basically. Who's to say that T'Challa's good? Listen, when you are focused and your whole life was built around one moment, and you get to that moment, you don't fail. If that's your sole focus, everything he did was to get to that moment. He was not going to fail in that moment. All right, I got to turn over the reins. I'm sure we'll still be talking about it. Johnny, Killmonger, man.
Killmonger mentioned that he's been training for that his entire life. He killed people in Afghanistan. He killed people in Iraq. He killed people, his own brothers and sisters, as he put it, on that very continent. Like, he literally told T'Challa, I trained my entire life for this, and I'm not going to lose to you, fam. I'm not. Now, of course, where he messed up, he just threw him off. He didn't actually kill him.
Exactly.
He should have killed him. And I guess I'm surprised he made that mistake. Of course, it's for the movie or whatever. But, like, I'm surprised he made that mistake that he didn't see that he was dead before he threw him off. But anyway... Killmonger was a great villain, an excellent villain. Definitely not better than Heath Ledger's Joker. But for the purposes of this film, he was a great, great villain. And I know y'all disagree with this, but I think it was a good thing that he died at the end of this movie.
We'll get into it. That's gonna be a whole part of the conversation by itself. We'll get into that. But Ralph, so piggybacking off what Johnny said, what did you think about Killmonger as the villain?
Oh, Killmonger was great, man. Like, I enjoyed that, you know, Ryan Coogler found a way to incorporate him from Oakland, because my research shows that he was a Harlem. Like, Killmonger was in Harlem in the comics. So, Coogler knowing Oakland, you make him Oakland. So, I get it. You know what I'm saying? But it made sense in the grand scheme of things. I just wish that we had a little bit more time with Killmonger to understand why he got that way. But that can be, like, something within his own thing. Like, I just... to understand how he got to that point, but he was very badass. He was dope. I enjoyed he had a grill. He had the fade dress.
Listen, the gold teeth, you know, man.
He was very
two, the two like, golds man, at the bottom, man.
Two golds.
Yeah. I enjoyed that, man. And like you said, like this was pretty much like a Rocky Clubber Lane situation, right? You got somebody that's hungry that really wants it. Like they trained their whole life for this. You comfortable. You've been here. You from a position of privilege. Like, T'Challa's a prince. Like, not to say that he doesn't work hard, doesn't train hard, but this is a, you know, you took my daddy there. Like, I've been using that my whole life to motivate me to get to here. So, you didn't want smoke with Killmonger. Yeah, y'all should have said the challenge should have waited a few weeks. Yes, it should have waited a few weeks. He needed time.
but you know what? Honestly, and the thing with this is, and this is where it's good to have villains that are layered. If Killmonger wasn't so fueled by his hate and his search for vengeance, he could have probably came to T'Challa and said, look, I'm your cousin. You don't know what happened. And T'Challa would have welcomed him with open arms. Like, and that's something I have to say about T'Challa. Like, he's been shown to be one of the most compassionate people in probably the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe. They even go back to Civil War. But we'll get there. We'll get there when we talk about T'Challa's character. But
T'Challa was very compassionate. I think even in the fact that he knew who Killmonger was, like he understood the purpose. Like he was kind of getting on that train of like, maybe we should open up our borders to the world and start doing this stuff, because Nakia put the bug in his ear way before then anyway. So he was already getting there. The wheels was already turning. So he understood why Killmonger was the way that he was, because Zuri put him on. Like Zuri told him. So it's like, I know what happened, so I get it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it leads more credence to Killmonger's whole plot that at the end of the movie, T'Challa does open their borders. Now, he doesn't do it in war like Killmonger wanted to do, but he does make a point now to go out and help the world and help people, not just their people as Killmonger wanted to do, but help more people with their technology. And that's kind of what Killmonger wanted to do it in force, whereas T'Challa is doing it in peace. But still, the overall goal of what he was doing, the a big part of what the villain's goal was very noble in a sense.
Yeah.
Eh. I mean,
yeah, I guess.
You get, I mean, like, seriously.
he wanted Wakanda to help black people across the world overthrow the oppressor.
True.
Like, that's what he ultimately wanted. He wanted Wakanda to rule the world, basically. That's what he wanted.
Yeah, and that is true. He did want Wakanda to rule the world, but he just the difference with their whole mindsets is Killmonger saw their people as the black people of the world, and they needed to overthrow. Whereas T'Challa puts a spin on that. He sees it as everyone is their people, so let's help everyone, and then we can all lift up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's more Martin and Malcolm up in here. You know, yeah, getting those dynamics.
Exactly.
Because like when I initially heard Killmonger's speech, I'm like, this is nothing but Magneto. Like Magneto says the same shit over just for me.
Listen. Okay, let's talk about this. Killmonger, best first movie Marvel villain. I'm not gonna take it because we'll argue about it. Is he the best Marvel villain?
No. The best Marvel villain?
MCU villain. So far, no. You're putting Loki over him too, Ralph?
Yeah, just Loki. Loki, it's only because we got so much of Loki. Yeah. Like, I just hate that they killed Killmonger. Like, but he couldn't stay
there.
Alive.
I'm
sorry, Yeah, we're getting to that. I understand why.
I can feel that.
But are we counting Netflix too? Because I don't think Killmonger was better than Killgrave either, to be honest.
I'm thinking cinematic, because Killgrave is is one of my favorite villains in all of freaking.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
We'll
talk
about that. We gotta get there. But so MCU, where does Killmonger rank for you?
I'm trying to think about other villains. Like
Is he better than Zemo? Is he better than Civil War? Zemo.
He's very similar to Zemo when you think about it, but he was smarter.
Yeah.
Zemo. Yeah. But the thing with Zemo is we got a glimpse of why Zemo was the way he was. All we know in Black Panther was that Black Panther killed his daddy.
His uncle killed his dad, yeah.
His uncle killed his dad. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know what the hell I just said, but yeah.
At the same time, with Zemo, technically the Avengers killed his son. So, killed his family.
Yeah.
Kind of the same,
Because all Killmonger had was his dad.
He had build up to what Zemo was doing, like just little strategic stuff. Like
the whole movie.
Like, right? I think with Killmonger, it's just like, you know, he helped Claw do what he needed to do. He broke him out of jail, and then he shows up in Wakanda. That's essentially what happened, right?
Yeah.
Like that was my little issues that I had with the movie.
It could be argued that he never would have gotten Wakanda had he not killed Claw.
Oh, facts. Yeah,
oh, yeah, that, he wouldn't have. Yeah, there's no way. So
that's movie.
We got to talk about it, man. They killed Killmonger. Now, considering how good he was as a first time villain, and considering the reset that we're going to get after Thanos, like with the whole restructuring, Loki may be gone, Thor may be gone. I just don't like the fact that they took him off the table where there's still so much story left to be told with him, possibly. It's so many, like he's already so layered in one movie. Imagine what we can do when we're on the third or fourth movie of Killmonger, like we are with Loki now at this point. He starts off at a better place than Loki started off. He could have ended so much better. Johnny, I know you're the one to pose, so we don't want to double team you. I'm gonna let you go first here. What do you think, man?
The one thing Killmonger wanted was to take control of Wakanda and take over the world, basically, to liberate Black people. Like, that's it. He had nothing else he wanted to do. That's all he wanted. That's it. So had he stayed alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
What? Then what? Because he's captured.
Can I give you my counterpoint to that? Is Loki, the one thing Loki wanted in the first movie was to best his brother and for his dad to see him as better than Thor. And we got so much more after that. Imagine if we would have ended that on Loki. That's all Loki wanted in the first movie. He didn't care nothing about taking over the world. None of that. He just wanted to best Thor and to prove that he was as good as Thor. How is that different?
He had, Loki had ample, or I guess he was given multiple chances to try to best his brother. He even tried to rule the earth with bringing a Chitauri and shit.
I'm saying the first movie. See, you're bringing.
Are we talking about Thor?
We're talking about Thor. Because you said that there was not much place for Killmonger to bounce off of after this movie. So I'm saying, wasn't Loki in that same place as Killmonger at the end of the first movie?
He was. I agree. But my question is, what else could Killmonger do? Like, is he going to try to take over another planet? Like, what?
Well, I mean, look at it like this. Like, I already made the X-Men comparison, right? Magneto always was pro-mutant. So he always found ways to, like, get his message across. Like, in the first, like, we just gonna stick to X-Men 1. Like, he tried to change everybody to mutants with that damn machine.
Right.
That was the first thing. But, you know, throughout the movies, like, even throughout the whole X-Men franchise, Magneto was, like, the main villain throughout most of them.
True.
So it's kind of like it was the same thing with Magneto. It was, like, us against them. And that's what Killmonger could have provided, because it's always us against them. Like, it's always that.
And especially now, look at this. Especially now that Wakanda is out in the world at the end of this movie, imagine Killmonger being someone who's planting seeds of distrust and discontent with other countries against Wakanda. Because look at what they did to him. All he had to do is, look what they did to me, and I'm Wakandan. What do you think they're going to do to you?
Okay. I think I'm following.
It's just like the endless possibilities, because Killmonger would have been just a great complimentary piece to me. Like, just to see him out there put, like, say if he got a chance to talk to war dogs in these major cities and turned them against the Wakandan, like, empire.
Oh. But think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Say Killmonger would have remained alive. He somehow escapes Wakandan prison or whatever. He goes out in the world. Let's just say he goes to London, talks to the war dogs in London, convinces them to turn against Wakanda. They don't have nearly as much firepower as Wakanda does. How would they even go about it?
They don't have to overtly just all of a sudden turn against Wakanda. Imagine this. Infinity War is next. So the world is already going to be at discontent with Thanos. Thanos is coming to Wakanda. That's how Killmonger could have gotten out. He does go to those war dogs. He turns them against Wakanda, but they don't automatically, like, they don't pull away from Wakanda. They could have been like Hydra, where they're really loyal to Killmonger, but they're still technically working for Wakanda. Come on, man.
Now that's fire. That is fire.
And like I said, that wouldn't even have to come with the second Black Panther movie. This is something that you would necessarily not even like. Maybe they'll plant seeds to where T'Challa's like, oh, there's someone turning our war dogs against us. You don't know until the third movie that it's Killmonger the whole time, and now he's turned half the war dogs against T'Challa, and now they're going to war.
Hell Hydra. No, I'm bullshitting. But that's dope though. That's okay. All right, y'all convinced me. Goddamn. I'm happy now. Oh, okay. Another sidebar, and this is completely random. And this is, I guess, a tie to Doctor Strange. I don't know. But do y'all remember right when they were about to start sending weapons out to the war dogs in London, Hong Kong, and New York? Mm-hmm. Those are the same cities where there are sanctums in Doctor Strange.
I didn't think about that.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah. So I just want to throw that out there.
Playing those Infinity War seeds, man. Damn, man. I feel like pretty much. But let's move on. We got to talk about it. The hero of this movie. There's a lot of heroes in this movie because, like I said, the women in this movie were as much as played into the part of the ending of it as T'Challa did. But what are we saying about young Chadwick Boseman here? What are we saying about King T'Challa? What's going on?
Chadwick is a legend, but to just stick to this movie here, Chadwick did an amazing job. I think just with the acting and it shows that he struggled with being a king and a superhero, like a newly crowned king that just lost his father. And he's dealing with all the emotions of that, not really understanding how to lead, how to be a king, and looking for answers from a man that's not there anymore. So, and then he struggles with, still being a Black Panther, still trying to, find love with Zuri. Nakia, I'm sorry. So I'm just like, I'm blown away at what he had to deal with and how he had to overcome that. And then you have a distant cousin that comes kick your ass.
Not even this. That's his cousin.
Killed your uncle. Yeah. Like
everybody lied to you. So the way that you were brought up is completely a lie. So now you have to retrain your way of thinking. Yes. So now that you retooled your way of thinking, let's move forward. And he dealt with all that in adversity, in like real adversity. Like everything around him was crumbling. So I enjoyed it.
We basically saw him become his own man in this movie.
Yeah,
like through the course of learning about certain events. Like the shit was crazy. He damn near died because his dad killed his uncle. That's wild.
And for the scene, see your father, man.
That's one of the oldest things in film is paying for the sins of your father. And this movie is like, it has so many parallels. You can parallel this to mobster movies. Like, you can parallel this to something of, like, Norse mythology with Thor. Like, it's so many layers to this movie. They pulled everything off right. But, I can't say enough about T'Challa. He was a great character. Chadwick, that rural African thing, he played it perfectly. Everything about it, like the action scenes, everything. But we got to get ready to get into our hot takes. Before we get into our hot takes, I said we were going to talk about the fight scenes.
Mm-hmm.
The fight scenes in this movie were amazing. And I want to say this, is that the fact that they paced this movie perfectly to where, like, you would get a talking scene or a long story segment, then it would pick up with action, it would die back down, they'll give a little more story elements, pick back up with action. There was like four or five action scenes in this movie, not all long, but it served the purpose of the movie, kept you engaged. That's part of the reason why the runtime didn't feel as long as what it was, and I could have used another 30 minutes of it. But what did you guys think about the action scenes? And then we're going to get into our hot takes before we end.
That I can think of right now, the dopest action scene was like the car chase.
Yes,
I agree. Yeah.
Like the car chase was dope. And again, going back to Shuri, like she is so smart. Like, how do you create some device that you put on a car that you can remotely control from another part of the world? Like that, and you can see what's going on. That shit is amazing. Mm-hmm. And the fucking car was made out of vibranium. Like, come on, man. That's dope. That's just dope to me. That car chase was dope.
Yeah. But now I definitely agree with Johnny. Like, I enjoyed the car chase scene as well. Like, especially like where he had to turn the car.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, woo. And then, when they blew the car up, he ran up the building and everything. It was crazy. And then like when he when he grabbed Claw, like you can feel the emotion coming from him, just saying like every breath you take for, is mercy.
It's mercy.
Like, I was like, bro, talk to him. So I enjoyed like that dynamic. I mean that whole car chase scene. But every, you know, even the last war scene. I mean, you know, boss battle, however you want to phrase it. That was dope. Not even the fight between like T'Challa and Killmonger, but just like that last fight scene, like the door Milaje and what they had to do. Like they started like ganging up on Killmonger. She was like, "Oh no, y'all go handle them. I got." And then she did the, you know, four people stayed behind. I thought that was so dope. I was like, "Oh yeah," like just like how they were so uniform. Oh, bro, it was amazing.
Yeah, man. Fucking amazing. Oh, another thing. Go ahead, John. Oh, in that final boss battle, when Black Panther took down that rhino, the rhino had a vibranium horn, which is fucking crazy. But when Black Panther took down the rhino, I think that was like a page directly out of one of the comics. I can't remember like which issue or whatever, but that was an ode to the comic book. So I thought that was dope too.
Yeah, I mean the fight scenes were layered as well. That last battle was great. But we're gonna use that to transition into some hot takes, man. And my hot take, I'm sorry, I'm gonna leave this one off. The CGI in this movie at certain points was trash. Like I'm sorry, it was trash. Like the whole when they're both in their suits, like certain. And the thing is they created these beautiful suits. Like when you see them and it's really them in the suits, it looks great. But when it was CGI, completely computer generated. Creatures fighting against each other, it didn't quite get to where I wanted to get it. It I don't know, man. I had issues with the CGI in certain points. Not throughout most of the CGI in the movie. I want to say most of the CGI was on point, but in certain fight scenes, the CGI bothered me some. Go ahead, Johnny. What you got to say?
I was gonna say the very last shot of T'Challa and Killmonger when T'Challa took Killmonger on that cliff to watch the sunset. That's the CGI of their suits. Completely trash. So yeah, I had to throw that out there.
Like the ancestral plane when, you know, he went to meet his father for the last time, or at least the last time in this movie, that looked trash. I was like, oh. And real quick, did y'all notice the like ancestral planes are different? Like Killmonger's ancestral plane took him back to the apartment in Oakland or the high rise in Oakland. I thought that was interesting because the way you look at it is like my ancestral plane looks different from you because of my upbringing. Like I didn't grow up in Africa, so I don't have this plane, you know, or this tree with panthers to talk to me. I had to go back to this project in Oakland or this high rise in Oakland. And that's where my father had conversations with me.
And I think part of that, too, was because his father wasn't buried properly. He wasn't brought back to be buried in Wakanda. So that's where his lineage.
That's where he died.
So without that
point,
without their proper burial, that's what completely ruined kind of their bloodline. So now when he goes back to that plane to talk to his aunt, because it's to talk to your ancestors, that's where he was buried. So
and just imagine that had Killmonger known that, like, how come I ain't go back to this place? He'd have been even more mad.
let me ask you this. Like, do you think at the beginning of the movie when they told the story, was that N'Jobu talking to young Killmonger or young Eric?
I believe so. Yeah.
Like, he's telling him the story because he said, like, you know, throughout the movie, like, my dad told me about Wakanda and how beautiful it was and the sunsets, you know, all that stuff. And then, you know, Baba, tell me about where we're from. Like, he doesn't know.
Yeah.
So that's why he's getting that story from him.
Well, would Eric Killmonger know to call his dad Baba, though?
I think so, because he was telling him,
and he had the book. The written in Wakanda, so he knew that, and like he even showed him when he started speaking Wakandan. He knows he was taught very well of their culture and what they were.
But I mean, do you think he would have known, like, being that young though? Like, because the kid that was talking sounded super young, younger than the kid that was in Oakland. So I mean, just, you know, just a thought.
You make a good point there. Before we wrap, and because I promised them that they would be able to join, I got to bring the baby Hazes out. Kiddos, come on for a second. Come on. They were dying. Come on. Come on. Come on. Young Helen, what did you think about Black Panther? Thumbs up. That's it?
So great.
It was so great? All right. Thank you, baby. Young Zay Zay, come on. Yeah. Come on, son. What did you think about Black Panther?
It was awesome.
It was awesome. You still got your tie on?
Yeah.
All right, I feel that. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Maya, Come on, baby. Yeah. Come on, baby girl. What did you think about the movie?
It was the bomb.
Wow.
Bomb. That's what's up.
All right, babies. All right. So we had to get the baby Hazes, and I'm sorry I had to do a shameless plug. I love my babies, but
stun on us.
But nonetheless, we don't want Alan. Like, no, we ain't got time for that. But nonetheless, any hot takes that you guys have? Ralph, you kind of gave yours.
I have one. Like, I'll say this. Like, we need a Killmonger movie. I don't know how and where we're going to get this from, but I need Ryan Coogler to direct it, because Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan have this synergy, kind of like a Spike Lee and Denzel. But, you know, they just work well together. They find a way to do things. Like, Creed 2 is coming out this year. Hell, we need a Killmonger story. There's so many plot holes. Like, I need to know what led to him getting to even hooking up with Claw. I need to know this.
It's probably in the comic book. Like, Marvel does so many little tie-in comic books. It's probably in the comic book. But go ahead, Johnny.
Maybe his dad wrote about it in that notebook. Because his dad helped Claw get into Wakanda to steal the vibranium, like, way back when. So, you know, maybe it was just in that notebook somewhere.
No, I need to see it. I need a movie.
And then that begs the question, like, how old is Claw?
That's the thing. They said he's 30 years. So the man has to be in his 50s or 60s. He damn sure doesn't look like it. Like,
crazy.
But he's been using vibranium to keep himself young. But go ahead, Johnny.
All right, my hot take. Now, this is just me. This may or may not happen. I don't know. With Disney supposedly buying Fox movie studios, T'Challa and Storm would not be married in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Not yet.
I know a lot of people are hoping for that, but I don't think it's gonna happen. Especially after seeing the Black Panther movie with Nakia, Storm and T'Challa not getting married. I don't think it's gonna happen.
Yeah, it's probably not gonna happen. But I mean, they've given us such a dope character in Nakia that I wouldn't even be mad at it for real.
Yeah. So, I mean, my other hot take was Shuri making Iron Man suit, but y'all just glossed over that. Like, you watched it.
But yeah, I mean. For sure, man. I mean,
oh, okay. One more question. I'm done.
Okay.
Do y'all think that Spider-Man Homecoming and the Black Panther movie events happen at the same time, like during the same time frame? Because both of these movies take place directly after Civil War.
It's possible.
That's possible. Yeah.
Yeah. I just like the connection.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We got to before we depart. We got to give some ratings. We have to. And I kind of hate boiling down to a number, because watch or listen to the whole review, you kind of just get our vibe from the film from that. But people like numbers. So let's quantify the numbers. Johnny, 1 through 10, what are you giving this movie?
1 through 10? I'm going to say, God damn it, I didn't even think about it, but I'm going to say 7.5.
All right, 7.5. Ralph?
Yeah, I'm thinking about 8. And that's not to like one up Johnny or anything, but my reasoning for that is just, I just don't think the movie was perfect. Like, I think there are plot holes. I think there are glaring plot holes in it. And not to mention the CGI issues, right? So I just think that with some of those things, that, you know, negates it from being like a full-blown 10. But I still enjoy it. I still think the plot was good, but I think there were some points that could have been expounded on more.
And I'm honestly surprised that Johnny's was in the sevens. I was expecting at least 8s, 9.5, but I gotta give it a 9. Like, I'm sorry, and it's not even because of it being black led. It's not because it's Black Panther. Like, just as a movie, I enjoyed this movie so much. And I'm someone who enjoys good villains. Like, I love good villains, and Killmonger was such a good villain. It was automatically gonna be high for me. So yeah, I'm giving it a 9. So yeah, everyone, let us know what you think about it. We're getting ready to go ahead and plug our social medias and where you can find us. Listen, what am I doing? We got a huge announcement. We got two huge announcements. The first one, bro. Before we go, the first announcement is that The Awakened Soul has joined Urban Mogul and
Air Horn.
Urban Mogul Life, which is a huge platform. It's great. I'm excited to work with a lot of those guys as well. I'm excited for all the possibilities that have come out. We're finna do it big. I've been working on The Awakened Soul for so long, and to have someone who heard it, liked it as much, and wants me to be a part of what they're going on, That was huge. But that's a personal thing. Be on the lookout for that. I tweeted out my logo now with the UML stamp, so we're officially familiar over there. But something that's more personal to the people who are on this panel. I need a drum roll. Can we listen? Anyone who's listened to either Oversaturated or The Awakened Soul knows that we've worked together several times. We worked together well with brothers. Everything. Like, I support everything they do. Oversaturated is legit my favorite podcast. And so I love working with these guys. So we decided to join something together. We're going to do a joint project called The Breaks Radio. The Breaks stand for Be Real, Excel as King Should. So and it's not going to be nothing weekly necessarily, but it's going to be something where we join together and we're going to do it. It's going to be live, YouTube. We're going to be everywhere with The Breaks Radio, and it's going to be big for the culture. We're all three well-rounded guys with TV, music, film, pop culture, everything. And it's going to be a little different than what you get on our podcast itself, because it's going to be the three of us, and there's going to be times where we agree, there's going to be times where we don't agree, but I'm so excited for that venture as well, man. What do you guys think about it?
Hey, man, I'm excited, man. It's a joy to like, you know, me and Johnny definitely started on this journey together, but to, you know, gain another brother in this podcast stuff, man, it's beautiful, man. So we're excited, man. This joint venture is going to be dope, man.
Listen, man, 2018 is the year of litness. So, hey, like, and I used to hate that word, but I'm adopting it because it just describes how exciting shit is. Like, the fact that, you know, me and Ralph been doing podcasts for almost a year, and we've collaborated with CEO so many times. It's like, it would make sense for us just to combine and do something completely new and fresh for people to consume, because we click well. All three of us click well. So we hope everybody enjoys what we are about to bring to the masses. So I'm excited about it.
It's going to be lit, man. And yeah, I don't really like using lit either, but this is almost no other way to describe it. It's definitely
yeah, man.
But before we go ahead and go in and turn off this live, let's go ahead and plug all of our social media and everything. First, Ralph, you go first, man. Tell everyone.
Hey, man. Find me at The Mind of Ralph, all one word, on Instagram, Twitter. I don't know why, and Snapchat. The Mind of Ralph. And then, Johnny, you got the Oversat stuff, right, too, bro?
Yeah. All right. So y'all go follow me personally on Twitter at JON2_ and the letter B. And then y'all have to follow the podcast social media pages. And that's Oversaturated the Podcast. So Instagram, we're Oversat the Podcast. Twitter, Oversat Podcast. And our email is oversatpodcast@gmail.com. And all of our episodes, all of our merch, our bios are on our website, oversatthepod.com.
And me, you guys can follow me at CEO Haize. That's at CEOHAIZE on any social media platform that I happen to be gracing with my wonderful, wonderful presence. But also, you can check out the podcast. Anyone who's checking this video out for the first time, and you're wondering what the hell is this Awakened Soul shit that's on the screen right now. The Awakened Soul is my podcast where we talk about literally everything and anything. It's to provoke thought, conversation. We get deep with certain topics. We're on anywhere that there's podcasts. The Awakened Soul is on there, so definitely be there to check it out. And as we get ready to go into this next venture, we look forward to being able to interact with all of you guys to keep this whole thing going and this movement going. Now we're going to go into I know it sounded like we stopped, but like I said, that was pulled from the live show. We're getting ready to go into just a discussion. It's about 20 minutes that me and the boys did. Just about the growth of superhero movies and where we came from, where we are now, and where we see it continue to go. So just another brief musical intro. And then after that, we're going to get that last segment. And that's the end of the show. I look forward to seeing you guys next week.
Go up my crowd in rotation. Yeah. Are you on 10 yet? Are you on 10 yet? Wait. Are you on 10 yet? Are you on 10 yet? I live on 10. Wait. Are you on 10 yet? Are you on 10 yet? Fuck the place up. Fuck the place up. Fuck the place up. Fuck the place up.
All right, so fellas, we talked about Black Panther. We discussed the movie, but we got to talk about where it stands as far as like the progression of Black superheroes depicted in film. So we got it. We can include Luke Cage in this, but we got Blade, We have Falcon, which he hasn't had his own movie in the MCU. We got even as far back as like Steel with Shaq. We got Meteor Man. Like who blank, else am I missing?
Blank,
like
Blank Man.
Oh no, that we're not counting that as a superhero.
Blank
Fuck
Man,
that.
Hey, Blank Man, is
shit, man. Are we counting Black Lightning at any point?
Are we counting TV shows in this? Because we can, if we can throw Sailor Black Kane, Lightning in there, right? Yeah. So we could throw Black Lightning in there also.
Wait, Rhodey from Iron Man.
Oh yeah, Don Cheadle. So I mean, but most of those characters haven't had their own solo movie. I mean, the biggest. Okay, let's start with this, because this is the first Black superhero movie I can at least remember. You guys can correct me if I'm missing something. But was Meteor Man the first Black superhero movie, like lead superhero?
I think so. What year did it come out?
Like 91, because Blank Man was 92. It had to be 90 or 91.
Well, yeah.
All right, so we'll start with Meteor Man, which Black Panther is definitely better than Meteor Man. Meteor Man looks like it came out in 93. But what are we thinking about Meteor Man, man? Like, as far as like a Black superhero, the first one, at least according to our research, anyone who's listening, correct us. We'd love to hear if we missed anything, but what do we think about Meteor Man?
Honestly, I think I've only seen it like 2 times in my life, and I barely remember it.
I was gonna say I have no real takes on it, because I treat it as like a parody almost.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's what it was for real. I mean, so let's move on from that then. The best, and let's not skip. What was the Will Smith superhero movie? He was the drunk
Hancock.
Superhero. Hancock. So Hancock, Luke Cage, Black Panther, and Blade are probably if we're counting little small screen too, we still got Luke Cage and Black Lightning, which is dope as hell. So how are we ranking the hierarchy of black superheroes depicted in film, man, and TV?
Well, you have to go Black Panther, and that's not because that's not a prisoner of the moment. The man is he's a king. Like that's what he is in his off time. Like you can't get any better than that. And he's rich, he's intelligent, all that stuff, right? So if you're going second,
right.
For me, it's Luke Cage, man. I don't know if it's just because we spent so much time with the character between Defenders. Like, Luke Cage, I loved everything about Luke Cage. And I'm talking about the character, not even the show, because I have my problems with the show. But as far as the character, I don't see any holes there. And I like the fact that he's of the people. Like, he's of that area. He's not even necessarily trying to save the world. There's something about that, for me at least.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going that route, I guess 2A and 2B will have to be Black Lightning and Luke Cage, right? Because they pretty kind of the same, almost. Mm-hmm. Only thing with Black Lightning is he's like, he became Black Lightning again after 9 years to like help his family. But after the community saw the glimpse of him, it's like, okay, maybe the community needs him more than he thought he did. And I think it's wild that his wife at the time was like, you could either be Black Lightning or you could be with me. Like, you gonna make this man choose?
That's women.
And it's people dying though. Like, that's crazy. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I guess there's levels to it, because I mean, you do have 2 daughters to think about. Like, I don't think, have we ever seen like superheroes with like legit families?
True.
Yeah, you might.
True. The only superhero with a legit family, and this was what we found out about this is far after it, was Hawkeye in the Avengers. I can't think of any other superhero.
That was hella random.
Yes.
Damn. Meteor Man had a family, right? No,
the dog.
Wait, what?
The dog wasn't even his. The dog was Bill Cosby's. Never mind. They'll take that back. That's...
Blank Man became a superhero because his grandma died.
We are not talking about Blank Man. I refuse, man. I refuse.
That's what made him. That's what made him.
Tragic event, man. Most superheroes become superheroes from tragic events.
Facts. Where are we ranking Blade, man? I mean, we talked about Wesley Snipes trying to get a Black Panther movie off the ground in the 90s, but Blade had to be not even just for black superheroes. Blade was kind of one of the first superheroes that kind of made this go mainstream before, and it's crazy because it was before X-Men, before Spider-Man.
Yes.
He really ushered in the superhero movie era where people started realizing these movies can be legit. And what do you think? And I've heard conversations with people that don't see Blade as a superhero. And I guess I can kind of understand that because that movie really wasn't how superhero movies are depicted now. But he is a Marvel character. What do you think, Ralph?
I think I'm kind of guilty of that thinking, because it's just with Blade, I mean, he was a vampire hunter. Not to say vampire hunters don't save people, but the way that the movie was set up is just that, like, in the 90s, you know, vampire movies are huge anyway, so just Blade kind of made sense. But it just didn't give you that superhero feel, if that, you know, kind of makes sense.
Was he trying to save the world, or was he trying to save, like... I can barely remember the first Blade movie. It was so long ago.
Well, he was he was trying to look for his mother, I think, in the first movie.
No, the first one, he thought his mother was dead. The first movie, he was legitimately just trying to exterminate all vampires. Like, that was his motivation, was to exterminate vampires.
Yeah, his mom popped up. Okay, it's coming back to me slowly. But, yeah. I mean, I respect Blade for what it is now, just in a nostalgia sense. But just, I guess then, I just didn't think of it as superhero.
Yeah. And I guess maybe because, excuse me, at the time it came out, it was the first quote-unquote superhero movie to, like, usher in the superhero genre. So it was like, I guess at the time we were like, you know, it's a movie based off of a comic book character, but we can't really classify it as superhero. I don't know.
I feel that.
But as a character, we might have to put him at number three. Like, we got one Black Panther, 2A, 2B at...
Luke Cage and Black Lightning.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Blade at 3 or 4, I guess. What y'all think about that?
I like that. So where are we bringing in War Machine and Falcon?
Unfortunately, they are like sidekicks. I hate to say that, but so they have to be kind of low.
And the thing with War Machine that bothers me is that he's been in, what, like 4 movies now at this point, and he's had less screen time than Falcon had in 2 movies.
Well, I was going to try to make a case for it, but I don't think I can.
As a matter of fact, 3 movies. I'm sorry, because Falcon did appear in Ant-Man as well.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he did.
Got his ass kicked, though.
Exactly.
And so, Falcon's just such a, like, you know, Captain, how we doing this? What we doing? Like, how we doing this? I'm like, oh.
Oh, my God. My pet peeve. Like, he follows Captain America like a lap dog. Like, the shit is so stressful.
I understand the fact of respecting the man, but come on now.
Come on, man. You got wings, bro. You can fly. Like, come on.
But that's it. Like, he has no superpowers at all. Like, and I like Falcon, though.
More dope. Like,
exactly. I like Falcon because he stands on his own. Yes, he fucked
that. You can't give me no wings and expect me to fly. I'm scared of heights. So the fact that he could do that, like, that's dope to me.
I feel that.
So I definitely put War Machine over Falcon.
I'm going Falcon over War Machine.
What?
Yeah, I'm going Falcon over War Machine. Just because I think he's done, like, I'm a cinematic person. He's done cooler shit than War Machine has done, man. War Machine showed up and shot a couple things with his cannon on his shoulder, and then flew the fuck off and got his ass beat in Civil War. Like, he almost died.
I'm about to say he's paralyzed now. Yeah. So I guess
that's going
to
be fixed. They show him moving around in the damn Infinity War trailer. I'm sure the Wakandan technology is going to be the cause of that.
Facts. So. But Iron Man wouldn't have defeated... what was old boy in Iron Man 2? Ivan. Was his name Ivan?
Whiplash, dude.
Whiplash, yeah. Fuck
he
him.
Wouldn't defeat him without...
True. So. I mean, yeah, you got a point there. I don't know, man. I don't know. It's hard between... Those two is like... They're almost at the same level to me. It's hard to pick one over the other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially with their depictions in the movies. I think that it's just, you know, hard to put one over the other. I could see your case for Falcon over War Machine in this case. So I'll agree with that.
So, I mean, I guess we've kind of talked about the history of superhero movies, but where do we see it going now? What's the next black superhero you'd like to see depicted in film, man? And we'll all pick one. We may all come up with the same one. Ralph, what about you?
Come back to me.
Johnny?
I need John Stewart, the Black Green Lantern. I need him in a movie ASAP.
I gotta go with you there, man. Like, I was hoping we were all gonna have different ones, but I forgot. Like, that's part of your whole persona, man. But
yeah, man.
I mean, but yeah, John Stewart. I gotta see John Stewart. And on top of John Stewart, just so I can have something different. I need now with superhero movies now. I need to see another Blade. I want that. I need to see another Blade.
Especially in this version of the MCU, it has to be. Like, it has to be.
Who would y'all get to play it? Play a Blade.
Blade?
You know what's crazy though? I could see Michael B. Jordan being a dope Blade, but now it's not gonna happen because he played Killmonger.
Well, hey, they let Chris Evans play Human Torch and Captain
But that's not Earth. The same universe though, man. This would be the same universe.
You're right. You're so right. I totally missed that.
You know what would be wild if like somehow he comes back as like a vampire and then becomes Blade. I know that's like a long shot, but that'd be crazy.
Damn, who could I see playing Blade? This is. I mean, hell, they use damn half of black young black actors in Black Panther. Like, it's gonna be hard to cast anybody black now.
What do you think about your boy that played in the Star Wars franchise? You think he could pull it off?
Boyega, I like Boyega.
Yeah, yeah.
He could. What do we think about O'Shea Jackson Jr.?
Man, he's too light skinned.
Well, I mean, Blade is half white, so we can pull that off.
That's hilarious.
You know what though? You know what? All jokes aside, it's same movie. What about the guy who played Dr. Dre in Straight Outta Compton? I keep forgetting his name.
Fort Hawkins.
Yes.
Yeah. Him playing Blade. I can see that. I can see that too. Actually, I could probably see that a little bit more than my Star Wars guy. I can't, you know, I hate to keep saying Star Wars guy, but that's what
Jim Boyega. Yeah. I know his last name.
Because he's you know doing a lot of big things in Hollywood. I know he'll be a big draw, especially if you know want that crossover. Not to say Corey Hawkins doesn't have star power or star potential.
Yeah, I mean after that 24 spinoff failed, he's kind of been MIA.
Yeah,
I'm really trying to like John Stewart is my guy. I definitely need to see him in the movie, but I'm trying to think what other black superhero do I think should get a solo movie.
Ralph, you haven't given your pick yet for a black superhero to get that solo movie, man.
You know, I hate to go like something that we've seen, but it could be cool to see like you know Luke Cage get a bigger platform and see what they can do with that and see if they recast and retool everything, because I would love to see him, Misty Knight, and all those characters on a bigger screen. But I understand, you know, Netflix already kind of did that.
Oh, I got another one. Static Shock.
But see, that's too similar to Black Lightning, though.
True, but...
Now, I can see him coming into the Black Lightning TV show.
Man, that would be... Like, did y'all ever watch the...
Absolutely.
Static the cartoon? Shock show?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
That show was amazing. But yeah, Miles Morales is getting a
cartoon.
Animated movie later on this year. There's are you familiar with Cloak and Dagger?
Cloak and Dagger. They're coming out with a TV show too. I think it's all
On Freeform. I think
so.
I'm interested to see that as well.
Absolutely. After Runaways was dope. So after that, I'm feeling like the Marvel TV. They're finally bringing all that TV around. Come on, Ralph, man, come with a superhero. Yeah. We still waiting.
I said Luke Cage, but no, that doesn't count.
I mean, that's not a new. We said new, man.
A new man, it ain't too many.
No love for Spawn? No love at all? Like, damn.
Yeah. Wait, did Spawn come out before
Blade? Yeah.
We didn't even talk about. We did not even talk about Spawn in the black superhero list. Like,
I know.
Yeah.
Gotta put some respect on Spawn's name out here.
Spawn is dope character in the comics, man. That movie was, at the time it was dope, but have you tried to go back and look at it as an adult?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of our whole, like, nostalgia ain't shit thing. Like, going back and watching it, that movie is really trash, but I watch it because I feel like a kid again watching it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys this. How do we feel since Blade actually had a trilogy? How do we feel about that as a whole franchise?
Well, to be 100% honest with you, like I really don't remember Blade 2 and 3.
Really? Because 2 was the best one out of all
two, of them. 2 was the best one. 3 Which was kind of like that reach.
Yeah, that's when they went too far. They brought in the actual Dracula and called him Drake. Like, that. They was doing too much. They was doing too much.
Which one of those had Jessica Biel in it?
That was the third one.
Oh. Yeah. And Ryan
Reynolds. That's back when she still had booty. Now that shit is all gone.
But yeah, Ryan Reynolds was in 3 as well.
He was like, basically Deadpool in that movie.
Yes. I was like, he's basically doing what he did, you know, before Wolverine, which is okay. But yeah, Blade 1 and 2 were very, very good. I think they reached for number 3, which is, you know, okay. Some people do that. Well, you know, some franchises do that. But I mean, I think it's a dope franchise overall.
Yeah.
But I would like to see him get reintroduced into this MCU. How would that work?
Man.
They remaking everything there, you know, anything else. The first Blade was 20 years ago.
That's crazy. Like, that's so crazy.
Damn, that was 20 years ago?
Yeah, 98.
That's crazy, man. But the second Blade was the first movie I ever torrented. Like, that was the first torrent I ever downloaded. I was a freshman in high school. First movie I ever illegally downloaded was Blade 2. Yeah. I'm sitting here admitting felonies on.
I'm pretty sure.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, right. It is what it is. But yeah. So I mean, that's pretty much it. That wraps this up, man. I mean, I don't have anything left to say. Anything from you guys?
This doesn't have anything to do with black superheroes, but if this Fox deal goes through with Disney, like, they have to, like, I want to see how they're going to, like, merge everything together. Like, they have to. And I just want to know, I just want to see how is it going to happen? Because I need an Avengers versus X-Men movie. But that's not going to be until like 2035 or something like that. Like,
yes. To properly give it its just due and not Justice League, this thing is going to take a while to incorporate Fantastic Four and X-Men properly into the MCU. Like, imagine them doing another Fantastic Four in the MCU. Like, another. Like, they just rebooted the damn franchise. But to reboot it again.
Yeah. I actually don't think their reboot was bad. Like, I didn't think it was bad.
It was bad.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, that's all I got.
All right. Well, I mean, fellas, we already did our plugs, man. You can tell the people where they can find you again. Go ahead, Ralph.
Oh, well, The Mind of Ralph, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter.
Yeah, and y'all can just follow me on Twitter because that's where I do most of my social media-ing. So JON 2 underscores and the letter B. And check out oversatthepod.com. All of our episodes are there, and we got merch for sale. Holla at us.
Hot merch, by the way. I gotta order something, by the way. I've been putting that off for too long. But yeah, you can follow me at CEO Hayes. This is the Awakened Soul / Oversaturated. Let us know what you thought about this. Get to us. Breaks Radio is coming very, very soon, so be on the lookout for that. But yeah, that's it. We out.
Said where I was shot me before I even started. When I get to one brick, then the game I would depart with. Got to one brick, then I look to the sky like, sorry, got a lie, but give me one more try. Got the 2 bricks, new cars, new whips, but niggas never learn till they end up in the news clip. The irony of selling drugs is sort of like using it. Guess it's two sides to what substance abuse is. Can't stop, won't stop, addicted to this new shit. Brand new convertibles, I'm so ruthless. Front row fight night, see how big my tube is. Fuck HD, niggas. See how clear my view is. But there's a price for overdoing it. Doing it this big will put you on the map. Stick up kids, it's out the tax. Plus the FBI boys with the cameras in the back. Damn. Mercury.
Iron Man.
Take a flight. Coming to a town near you. This is black superhero music right here, baby. Y'all ready? Let's go. Yeah. Come on.